This gives them some time to relax, and of course there is music. It was only now that I heard a tune, which seemed to be coming from a radio. It gives me an opportunity to talk to them and let them know what is happening here, like an introduction tour. He grinned, and for a moment I considered him to be like a modern version of the ferryman of death taking the passengers across the River Styx, but for that he just looked too casual and jovial. He also told me that sometimes he has musicians on board and catering, and there was a real party atmosphere, but it very much depended on his passengers. In any case, he was determined to show people a good time and lift their spirits. Looking at his boat, I noticed there was another man talking to the new arrivals and shaking hands. He wore a white skipper's hat and smiled a lot. The captain explained that he had staff to answer questions and help with the drinks. "There is of course a payoff for me and my crew for providing this service," he said. "After every trip the cruiser gets bigger and better. When I started I had little more than a rowing boat, carrying 4 people maximum. I get a lot of pleasure out of this." I wished the captain all my best, left the boat and wandered over to another group of people. I was keen to interview someone who had been a resident here for some time. A man in his 30s with a blue shirt and a white tie was an obvious target. "Have you been here long?" I asked him. "Long enough," he replied. I inquired whether he would agree to my asking a few questions, which he did. I was curious about whether there was some kind of equivalent to Earth's economy here, a question which keeps popping up whenever I see signs of commercial activity. "Do you use money?" "I have never come across this," he laughed. "This is a place where you can happily live and survive without any money, I am glad to say." I clearly remembered when in a bar on a previous Obi occasion when trying to find people to interview, I had ordered a drink and, as if by magic, pulled some strange coins out of my pocket and handed these to the bartender, who took it without questioning. I now wondered whether he did that so as not to embarrass me. I walked down the road with 2-story buildings and shops on either side. Then I entered one with the door open, the inside completely open plan, with furniture on display but not very densely packed. On one side, partitioned off from the rest of the showroom, I spotted a large bed covered with blue sheets and a young woman sitting on it, looking slightly lost. "How long have you been here?" I wanted to know. "Not very long," she answered. "I made a friend and we made this bed our kind of refuge where we sat and talked, but she has left and I don't know where she went." She looked a bit sad. I felt like comforting her and started by saying that, like everything I guess, it will take a bit of time to get used to things and that her friend was probably just finding things out for herself. We then chatted a bit more, but I suddenly felt aware that I was idling away time and that I could make better use of my out-of-body experience. Remembering that I was actually meant to be sitting in my chair meditating, I was not doing anything like meditation, but was wasting time wandering around rather aimlessly in a fairly low-level environment. With that I left the shop, and as soon as I was out in the open and by myself I chanted the Om mantra. Instantly I was airborne and the environment around me began to fade. The pleasure of being pulled skywards and drifting through bands of beautiful colors is difficult to describe. Nevertheless, I was aware that this was not a spiritual state as such, more like a soft wave of joyful emotion. This made me clearly aware that I was still on an astral level. As I focused on my surroundings, I realized that I hadn't transcended very far at all, perhaps just above the state I had just come from. The environment was much brighter though. I was suspended in midair as I drifted over houses and rooftops. Here, at least, there was sunlight, the colors were more vibrant and the season more summery than before, but as soon as I began acclimatizing I was pulled down to earth as if by a magnet. After a gentle landing, I noticed just how earthly this level of reality was. I could have easily been in any normal waking world, and if somebody had said so I wouldn't have found it hard to believe. Instead I refocused my attention on the mantra again. This time a large wave of energy grabbed me and flung me over a massive abyss, filled as far as my eyes could see with geometric pattern and structures. I paused in the air to take in the sight. This was truly breathtaking, and instead of continuing with my meditation, I stopped and drank in the sight. As an artist, this was impossible to ignore. Now I knew for sure that I had cleared the great divide of the astral level and was in a world of thoughts and form. I cleared a massive structure of an intense purple color in multiple nuances, like an enormous Gothic arch that dwarfed everything around it. I found a familiar landscape which I recognized only as familiar because it gave me a feeling of being at home. My surroundings, however, were like nothing I had ever seen before. The intricacies of the textures, the evolving shapes around me, which painted and sculpted the scenery as I went along, were of such incredible richness and complexity that it would be impossible to reproduce it in any form, in any media known to man. This was simply too overwhelmingly rich and too rapidly changing for any artist to be able to capture. I drifted through incredible thoroughfares of shapes, with multi-layered iridescent pattern, perfectly designed, often too awesome to study and comprehend their origin or nature of their existence, because the moment I tried, their shapes started to shift, change and permute into new patterns. Everything at its root level was made of light. The most astonishing thing of all was that this world interacted with me. With every breath I took and every thought or feeling I released, it responded by adjusting the subtle curves and colors, and moved obediently into new configurations. This all had a joyful effect, but I cannot call it joy in a nor traditional sense, because joys known previously had limits, were exhaustible. Here they were not, because they fanned out into new refinements of joys just like the landscape evolved in front of my eyes. This ecstasy filled me with light and being as I realized that I had become one with joy, and I lit up, nurtured by what my spiritual eyes were drinking in. It became dark, but only relatively so, because I was drifting like a great eagle over an earthly landscape with great mountains in the distance and city lights. I was aware that this was not an earthly country, but another great non-physical reality created by disembodied men and women. Gently I descended to the ground, onto a vast mushroom-shaped hill with a gentle dome and overhanging sides, covered in velvety soft green grass, untouched, swaying gently in some heavenly breath. Dotted all over this were clusters of trees and lights. I landed next to a great ancient oak tree of indefinable age, but its mighty branches bent skillfully and artistically into various directions and shapes, as if following the forces of a different kind to those our earthly nature could muster. Judging by the light, it felt like a beautiful summer evening, catching the golden rays of a setting sun and painting the world in a soft color with ambient shadows in purple hues, so subtle they were barely discernible. As I rose again, I began to notice how huge this earthy mushroom island actually was, and that I was not the only occupier. Among the many trees there were benches and people wandering around and leisurely sitting down and enjoying their summer's wealth. Some were playing instruments and some were dancing. As I ascended further into the air, so I could appreciate the scenery better, I saw a restaurant emerge further away, surrounded by tables and benches. People having their meals were drinking and chatting cheerfully and laughing. I began to notice that the trees I had passed were caught in the light of an invisible torch I seemed to be carrying, and everywhere I went the surroundings seemed to be lit up. Soon I caught the attention of a few passers-by, who looked at me with amazement, pointing at me, their faces lighting up. I tried to encourage them to follow my lead and rise into the air to enjoy the weightlessness, but instead they were running alongside me, cheering and skipping like little children chasing a balloon. All this attention seemed to have an invigorating effect, and I felt a strong burst of energy, which I released back on the spectators. As I drifted further, people got up from their benches and one by one they followed my lead, rising into the air wherever I passed, shouting and laughing as if I was some kind of fairground attraction that needed to be tested. As I drifted past the restaurant, nearly everyone was airborne by then. People were holding hands and forming squadrons, singing as they did so. Their combined joy had a powerful illuminating effect, lighting up the whole land and its atmosphere for miles around. I took leave when I became aware of my physical body. My chin was resting on my chest and I had slumped forward from an upright meditation position. For a few minutes I remained in this position, frozen and still, knowing that if I moved, even breathed, I would lose the link to my journey. So I remained and revisited the whole event twice over. Then I got up and entered it in my diary. The 12th of July 2009, dying observed from the other side of death. I woke up at 4:45 a.m. and, being unable to go back to sleep, I decided to go to my meditation room and use the stillness of the early morning to meditate. Meditation went easily into a deep calm. After about half an hour I felt a yearning to enter the higher state of consciousness, utilizing the out-of-body state, because this is the highway into that experience. Unfortunately, my deliberate intent had the opposite effect and simply blocked me from achieving this. Instead, I decided to go back to sleep and set my intent on gaining lucid awareness during my dream, which I aimed to convert into an OB. It took a while, but after some surreal dream scenes involving skeletons coming alive and acquiring human form, I thought this was too unreal and instantly became aware that I was in a dream. As soon as I achieved full waking consciousness, the whole dream environment disintegrated and, to my utter astonishment, I was in a vast, empty space filled only with drifting bands of colors. There was literally nothing to focus on other than what I could conjure up in my imagination, which would then appear before me. The first thing that my mind materialized before me was a clipboard. With a smile, I recognized the symbolism of this image, telling me that I should use this state of mind to complete certain tasks I had set myself to investigate during my waking hours, such as exploring the power of healing. My wife had been suffering from a prolonged chest complaint. The last time I attempted to try this out, I was unable to find her and then was distracted by a number of other events. I started by sending some healing, but instead I opened a vortex into a completely different direction. What was still fresh in my mind from my meditation was to gain entry into the higher states of consciousness. I also figured that healing could be more effective from the two. This urge suddenly became overwhelming and I allowed myself to be swept away by the intensity of it. I simply surrendered to the current, expecting it to take me into new unknown heights. But it didn't quite turn out this way. Instead of rising into a sublime state of consciousness, I was torn into different directions as if some outside natural currents were competing against each other to pull me into their own unique domains. One moment I rose on a stream of exhilaration heavenwards, the next moment I plunged down to the center of an unknown world with the breakneck speed of a roller coaster ride. I soon grew tired of these random ups and downs and decided to take charge. I focused my attention on a small spot of white light high up among the bands of colors in the otherwise featureless sky. Soon the spot grew into a brilliant star and then into a bright white sun, which pulled me towards it. But, just when I felt convinced that I would enter the gateway to some celestial dimension, the sun faded and I was plunged down into a labyrinth of chambers. Instantly my curiosity took hold and hijacked my original intent. I remembered the clipboard and that I was here to scout afterlife conditions. I was faced with gangways of intricate and luminous patterns, branching off into different directions, each one a different design, color, pattern and sensation. It was the strange atmospheres most of all that compelled me to take note, because there was nothing I could compare them with. Each chamber or hallway I walked through was a very distinctive environment, differing totally from the next one. I soon discovered that I had entered a series of fantastic dream worlds, manifested emotional feelings with their own unique textures and designs, clearly communicating what these feelings were made of, though none of which were of my own creation. With great curiosity, I wondered whether it was possible to enter the dream environments of other sleeping people, The surreal quality of the environments being littered with the most fantastical creations made me consider the fact that I might have accidentally entered some kind of dream sphere, which had granted me access to the innermost consciousness of other people who were blissfully asleep and completely unaware of my intrusion. My rational thinking was heading towards the idea that this time of morning was probably for many the most active phase of dreaming, entering the REM phase of dream activity. I might have simply fallen into some kind of dream sphere surrounding our globe, which might form a dimension in its own right. I was fascinated by this prospect and eager to investigate. Unfortunately, the surreal reality of these chambers soon became like the labyrinth of a gigantic sponge. No sooner had I left one dream chamber, when I got trapped in another one. I soon decided it was time to move out of this maze, but I couldn't see any way out other than terminating the experience by returning to physical awareness. I considered this option to be a reckless waste of opportunity and decided to call for an assistant instead. Immediately I shouted out, "I need a guide to get me out of here and help me enter the higher dimensions." No sooner had this request left me when a tall slim man in his 40s with slightly curly and dark blonde hair, clearly European of my own culture, appeared right before me, bearing a broad grin on his face. "You called," he said, with a tinge of sarcasm, as if he had been awaiting genie answering to his master. This sent a smile to my face. There was something about him I felt I could trust completely. His whole demeanor was very friendly and he radiated empathy and humor. Without further ado, almost naturally regarding him as my magic servant whom I had summoned from my lamp and whose sole purpose was to pander to my requests, I asked him that he should kindly take me out of this place and escort me into a higher, more spiritual dimension. At this he burst out laughing, which was so infectious that I too started to laugh at the frivolity of my request. "I will help you," he said, "but not yet. There is a reason why you are here and I want to show you a few things first." I asked who he was and he simply replied that his name was Philip, but that I could just call him Phil if I liked. I had rather expected him to reveal to me that he was my spiritual guide, here to assist me to reach the higher states of consciousness. He accepted nothing of this as he clearly read my thoughts and smirked mischievously. "I can see what you are after, but this is not how things work. I want to show you something else first," he responded to my thoughts. With that he ushered me through a number of chambers, very much of the kind I had hoped to escape from. He told me that some of the people who arrive here had actually died during their sleep or during a long illness. "I want you to watch this." I saw a man arriving in strange surroundings with organic protrusions coming from the walls like unformed hands. He was escorted by weird creatures, neither human nor animal, who tore at him recklessly and others who pulled on his limbs and finally dispatched him into an elaborate and colorful casket. He was then delivered into another room. This other room was an organic cave or the inside of a gigantic alien creature, the walls in rhythmic motion, like they were swallowing a prey, while the colors on the cave walls shifted and blended into different hues in some feverish display. I looked at my guide brimful of questions. "This person has just died as a result of his illness, but he doesn't know it yet. He thinks he is dreaming. What you and I have just done is enter his death environment, or his death dream if you wish." "What is a death dream?" I wanted to know. "This is a release of pent-up energies, of fears and anxieties," and he pointed out some fantastic and grotesque entities which seemed to take pleasure at tormenting their new prey. "For some new arrivals this is a bit of a nightmare, especially if they have fought hard to stay alive, mainly because they had a lot of unresolved issues from their life and were desperate to sort them out and finding it hard to let go. What you are witnessing is their inability to let go and you are seeing it from the other side of their struggle." Phil looked at me with a kind of misplaced and triumphant satisfaction, barely hiding a smirk from his face. I was slightly alarmed how this must have felt from the victim's point of view and started considering the prospect of such a reception at the end of my own life. Philip noticed my concern and reassured me that this is not the rule and not as bad as it looks. You could say that this is no more than a nightmare from which the person will wake, but instead of waking in his physical bed, he is most likely to wake in a different bed, possibly surrounded by caring staff, but on a different dimension. With that, another broad grin settled on his face as if congratulating nature on the magnificence of its practical joke. I'll leave you to it to study the different types of arrivals here and the kind of energies people bring with them when they depart from their world. Being an artist, you may find something of curiosity value here and perhaps even paint a picture. His strange sense of humor amused and alarmed me in equal measure as he left me stranded in a completely different environment, which was another feverish nightmare scene in which another man was struggling with his demons, who threatened to take him down into a deep abyss of which I could only speculate on the horrors it might contain. From my previous experience, I simply identified all these tormenting creatures as artificial entities, materialized energies created from fears, frustrations and regrets. I accompanied the man through various changing environments, preparing myself to intervene if called upon. Fortunately, after a short struggle, the man relaxed. He had realized that he was dreaming and then he saw me. I must have presented him as a token of normality in this mad world and reminded him that he was just simply having a nightmare. His environment began to change, brighten and harmonize, and then he disappeared from it altogether, leaving me to find another new and completely different chamber and its victim. I quickly began to tire of these surroundings and felt mental exhaustion creeping in. I considered the possibility of waking myself up and instead of going into my normal meditation, simply going into my physical world kitchen to make a cup of tea and, of course, write all of this down. Instead, I decided to call on my new friend with an almost desperate plea. Phil predictably appeared. "You prayed?" he said mockingly. I thought his sense of humor was inappropriate, but I couldn't help being infected by his mischievous smile. "Take me out of this, I really think I have had enough. Why don't you just take me to another higher dimension?" I demanded. "There is still time for this," he replied. "I know you like art. Here, have a look at this." With that, he handed me a large book, bound in yellow silk and elaborately embossed. I noted that the dream environment had disintegrated around us and instead we were standing in an open, featureless landscape, with bands of color drifting across the open terrain like banks of shifting fog, swirling and shifting into wispy shapes and then disintegrating when disturbed by some invisible thought wind. I opened the book and when I stared at the first page, I realized that I was already standing in the midst of an illustration the artist had created. Soon I was drifting through a 3D watercolor illustration world of the artist's imagination. Never before in my life had I been able to appreciate the work of other artists from quite such close quarters, and I marveled at the accomplishments of his unique and individual style and sophistication of execution. The figures which rose out of the images were personalities in their own rights, but endowed with the artist's individual style. The outlines of their bodies skillfully described with dancing lines, the elegance of a woman's beautiful body fleetingly hinted at with caressing puffs of color that were rising into the air and defining new contours. The trees drawn with breathing touches of green and held in place by the indigo blues of the painted skies. I could see that this was how the artist had intended his work to be appreciated. This was what it was about, and it was incredible. I drifted from page to page, from illustration to illustration, in real time, in a real world, and after about 8 pages I soared into the work of another artist, totally different, unique and pleasurable beyond measure. After this I had other experiences. But for the sake of the narrative, I simply file these under further observations, of which I will go into more detail when discussing the higher mental and spiritual realities. I was grateful to my new friend, Phil, for having shown me all this. I did not quite expect to see this aspect of the higher dimension, but it was one of its many sides I needed to know and experience. I was going to learn how truly infinite the vistas of our non-physical reality really are. Until I can make the final choice for my relocation after death, I know that meditation and my surrender to the being state will release me from the confines of my social and biological self and prepare me for life's most incredible adventures. I have learned that our physical senses are too limited by the comparatively sluggish working of our physical nervous system to really appreciate the depth of art and culture. I remembered Aldous Huxley reporting the opening of our senses when taking mescaline in his book The Doors of Perception and Heaven and Hell, 1954. It may only be after we shed the heavy burden of our physical bodies that we will truly grasp the wondrous depth and infinite planes of our inner and outer universe. No date, healing and learning places. I have read several books about life after death, mainly written by mediums channeling their communication. There has been frequent mention of the care and attention given to new arrivals who have finished their physical lives. As this documentary narrative solely relies on my personal experiences, I can only give testimony to what I have witnessed myself. One of these observations was that when posing a question, asking for help or calling out for assistance, almost always a response was forthcoming, though not always in the way I'd expected. Sometimes this assistance arrived in the form of an energy boost. For example, when I struggled in my endeavor to fly and pleaded for help, it felt as if somebody had given me an extra push or a lift upwards. The feeling of an intelligence behind this was quite often apparent, sometimes in the form of humor, like a chuckle when my flying efforts failed and I was caught up in desperate swimming movements or flapping my arms like a lame duck to stay afloat or lift off the ground. I can just imagine what a great source of entertainment astral travelers can provide for people over there. At other times, my request was instantly granted without the interference of an apparent intelligence, almost as if by magic, for example making a firm request to achieve clarity or to be transported to a certain location. However, calling out to meet a specific person did not always lead to a result, leaving me with a distinct feeling that the person was unavailable or did not want to see me. Occasionally, I received very personal help in the form of a mysterious friend or helper who appeared in various disguises, but I always clearly identified them as individuals. Other out-of-body experiencers have reported meeting a very specific personal guide, who was dedicated to them and always appeared as the same entity. Except for one stage during my OBEs, where I had a regular Chinese sage training me to reach higher dimensional levels, I seemed to be blessed with different helpers more on the basis of whoever happens to be available or suited for the specific nature of my request. A couple of them had very strong idiosyncratic personalities, with a very personal brand of humor. I quickly formed a close relationship to these people, even if I only met them once or twice. I am not in a position to speculate about who or what these entities were, but they felt more like the individuals one might meet on the physical level, if one were fortunate enough. With regard to the mechanics kicking in when making a specific request that was met with an automatic response, it is hard to say whether it was simply the energy of desire which fostered the response. At least, on the more energized levels, a desire could simply materialize the object focused on. There seems to be some kind of infrastructure, autonomous as well as one implemented by intelligent agencies, even to the extent of institutions or health and welfare centers. Here is a report of one such place I encountered. I found myself in a large park. Right in front of me was a flowerbed raised up from the ground and supported by a wall of natural sandstone. Colorful clusters of flowers cascaded over the edges. The abundant quality of this told me instantly that I was on a much higher dimensional level than some of the previous ones I had arrived at. I bent down for a close look to fasten my awareness and to achieve full clarity. When full waking awareness was established, I got up and looked around. There were people and couples strolling around at their leisure, like on a summer bank holiday, dogs playing and benches with tables, a scene that was instantly uplifting. I headed towards a large two-story building with a wide entrance. the windows on the ground floor covered floor to ceiling and allowed a view inside. There was activity, but not in an organized manner. Entering the main door, I headed straight up a flight of broad stairs to the first floor, where I entered another door leading into an open plan space. Here I was met with the friendly smiles of men and women who appeared to be nurses or at least wearing some kind of health worker uniforms.